Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my statement!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer.
Now, here's a six-pack of questions.
We got the professor, and John, I heard you talking about this earlier today, but Colin Cowherd, now at Fox Sports, he's got some pretty strong thoughts about, well, what's on the line for the Seahawks this season, and specifically Pete Carroll.
You know, I'll throw out another one that's not on anybody's article. Pete Carroll's in trouble in Seattle. He's getting close to 70. I think they're going to end up fourth in their division. They've got an offensive line that is years away from being elite. You can't win in this league. And the other thing is, he's got 1 year left on his deal. And they had a very, very bizarre draft, which does not appear to solve their biggest problem, offensive line, which is arguably first, second, third worst in the league. So McCarthy and Pete Carroll, who I both think are really good coaches, I think are on a much hotter seat than Jason Garrett, who I don't think is as good as either.
You know, John, before you answer, the whole thing about the offensive line has gotten old. I'm sorry. Yeah. You have Dwayne Brown. Dwayne Brown is a Pro Bowler. Justin Britt at center did not have the greatest year last year, but the year before that, he was an alternate to the Pro Bowl. You had a guy in Posick that was, you know, look, Fetty needs to make some strides, but Posick was a part of the rookie of the year team or all rookie team. I mean, that's gotten overdone. It's starting to piss me off.
Yeah,
hearing that from people like Colin Cowherd.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, how about doing some research, okay? It didn't hit what the Seahawks needed because they didn't take offensive linemen. They've got three number ones, former number ones, and two number twos on the offensive line. Okay, maybe they didn't play well. They didn't. They need to get better. That's why they made a change at offensive line coach, letting Tom Cable go and bringing Mike Solari in. So they've addressed that to a point where they should be better on the offensive line. They needed running back. Okay, I mean, you know, they got rid of Thomas Rawls. I mean, Alex Collins, they let go to Baltimore. And so they need one more guy. They get a good first-rounder in Rashad Penny. You know, they get Trey Flowers at cornerback. They get a blocking tight end. I mean, they are addressing things that they needed. And, of course, if you do some research, Colin, you might be able to see that. But to make that kind of – and also, how – crazy would it be in a year that you could have be down as many as seven Pro Bowl players to say, well, if he doesn't make the playoffs, he's going to get fired, Pete Carroll. I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. I don't see a scenario where he gets fired.
Right.
I just don't. Like, even if they went for it and Russell Wilson gets hurt, and I'm furiously wrapping my knuckles on my noggin again to knock on wood, like, even if they went 4-12, I cannot imagine Pete Carroll being fired. I could see Pete deciding he doesn't want to coach anymore. Mm-hmm. I even then, he's indicated that he always looks at it of like, do I have at least 5 years left in me? And he feels that he does. I don't think he's getting close to that. I don't see a scenario where he gets fired.
No, and I think that you can see that, you know, just like those who are trying to run Bill Belichick out of there. I mean, age right now is a little bit different because, you know, when you talk to Pete, I mean, he talks about Marv Levy and how long he coached. And, you know, now you have more coaches coaching into their 70s. And as long as you have the energy and the health, and he definitely has the energy, and you know he has the health. I mean, what was it, the root type of a diet that he took last year? And next
he went plant-based.
Diet. Yeah, so he goes to plant-based diet, and, I mean, he felt so good coming out of that because, remember, he has some, like, arthritis in his hands. Well, all of a sudden, that went away. And so he's now catching the football better and playing basketball and doing that stuff. You know, name me a lot of people. I mean, I wish I could be able to be as active as he does. You know, I just wish I could get a 30-minute jog in there sometime in the course of a week. But, no, I think that, you know, he's still – and, again, he's trying to turn this team back into being a championship team. You may not be able to do it overnight. I mean, if his accomplishment is just making the playoffs as a wild card, that's a major step because, you know, guys are going to get better and, you know, they still have a better team than they had in 2011 when they tried to, you know, make that next push.
I want to stop and just acknowledge that I love the fact that it finally made Dave mad. But like 2 years of talking about the offensive line, like Dave's finally just like, all right, I'm sick of it. This finally makes me mad. You talking about it. I'm tired. It was great.
Well, thank you, Danny. And the thing about Pete, yeah, that was the other thing. John, you talk to him fairly often. What's your sense for, because how old was Marv Levy? Was he like
72, 76? 73, I think.
73, yeah. What do you think for Pete?
I think
how many
72.
More years?
Yeah. I still think that if he can get this team winning in a couple years, that he may get another. He may want to get another contract.
Yeah,
I think he wants to win another Super Bowl.
Yeah, agreed.
I don't think
that put him in the Hall of Fame, wouldn't it?
No, probably not.
Oh, really?
Well, because we have we have a hard time getting coaches in the Hall of Fame unless we can get them over in the contributor committee.
Yeah, man. But if he won it, you don't consider any college though, do you? In the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
No, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's. I understand the criterion that it doesn't fit there, but you'd really because man, he had a most success. He had historically successful. He and Nick Saban are the two most successful college football coaches of the past 25, 30 years.
So you look at that streak he had, and that streak, if you go back, was interrupted by actually a game they replayed on Pac-12 Network the other day. I think it was an overtime loss in Cal, and then there was an overtime loss at Wazoo. And if you take those two out, the streak goes even further, and I think it would be the all-time. There was like an Oklahoma team like in the 50s or 60s that I think.
Yeah, they finally lost to Notre Dame.
Yeah, so anyway, yeah. But definitely College Football Hall of Fame for Pete. But I just in general, John, I think that he is being really underrated right now. I mean, I think that people are forgetting about Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson and how good they are together. And, you know, if it's Brady, Belichick is the best coach-quarterback combo, definitely right now it's Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson as the second best.
Well, and then what you watch is that, runs and windows go a certain way. I mean, it happens, pretty much because, you can't keep everybody. And here's how the cycle in the NFL goes. Okay, you start to get that good team together. You get that good young core group together. And, you start to give them second contracts, which this team did. And then your quarterback now gets to the point where he has to get the big pay. So it's harder to bring in free agents. And now because of your success, you're drafting at the bottom of the first round as opposed to the top of the first round. So if you go through and you look through history, every franchise that's had major runs and dynasty type of things has always had that 6-year or so drop off. And so, you look at, remember when the Patriots, even though they won division titles just about every year, they fell off 1 year and ended up, I think, having, getting Richard Seymour with the 10th pick. You look at Green Bay, they won about 6 years and they had a little bit of a drop off. Pittsburgh's done the same thing. I mean, it's just the cycle. And I think if you really go back to that USA Today article where this week they talked about the greatest secondaries of all time, what you saw was that, you get to that 6 to 8 year mark, that's when they all start to break up. I mean, it was 8 years for the Legion of Boom. It was about 6 years for the number two one, the Steeler secondary. I mean, all those great secondaries and all those great units, it's hard to keep everybody. And then when you're talking 8 years, now you're talking the player being, 29, 30, 31 years old. And at that age, even though you can still play some good football, there's a drop off because most players start to peak at the ages of 26 and 27.
One more thing with Colin Cowherd, John, where he said he thinks the Seahawks are going to finish fourth in the division. So he's assuming then, well, everybody assumes the Rams are going to win the division, and some are assuming that the 49ers will go ahead of the Seahawks. But this also assumes that Arizona will leapfrog the Seahawks. Yeah. I don't think too many people are thinking that.
No, I mean, you look at the odds and you look at the standings and the power ratings and the evaluations of the roster, most people think that they're a 6-win team. So for Colin to say that they're going to finish in fourth place is saying that, they're going to have a 5-11 season. Well, if Russell Wilson stays healthy as he has through his entire career, I mean, there's no way that he's going to get just 5 wins. I mean, you look at all teams with a top 5, top 6 quarterback, worst case scenario is they're 8-8. If things are bad on their roster. I mean, when Andrew Luck is back in there, the 3-13 team is an 8-8 team. You saw how bad it was for Aaron Rodgers. They dropped down dramatically, particularly after he got hurt. Now he's back, and that puts him, probably at 10 or 11 wins, maybe 12, we'll see. But, the quarterbacks help build you up, and, if you have the good coaching, and if they can get the running game going. I mean, here's the numbers that I really start to study in the last couple weeks, because I study the improvement in the running game. And so if you can get that running game to 1,800 to 2,000 yards, I mean, the plus 34 you have in the point differential goes into the plus 100. And if you're in the plus 100, I mean, it's maybe not as dramatic as the Houston Astros, but it's certainly better right now than the plus 25 of the Mariners. I mean, you're talking about a winning season.
John, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers. I saw a story earlier this week where it sounds like they're getting closer to an extension. And are we talking $30 million a year or more than that?
Oh, it'll be $31.75 or more because Matt Ryan has the best contract at $30 million. And you know he's going to be topped by Aaron Rodgers because, you know, once that cycle started to go above Aaron Rodgers' contract, you know, if Aaron's considered to be the best quarterback or one of the top two quarterbacks and Tom Brady's not stepping up and trying to claim that money, you know, it's all going to peak at the next Aaron Rodgers deal, whether it's 31.75 or 32, and then everybody else falls in underneath that.
Could we be at $35 million for Russell next year?
No. Cannot.
So 32 or 33.
No, I think it'll be whatever. It's going to be slightly, it's going to be, I think, like on the last contract. Now, you know that his agent, Mark Rogers, is not going to buy this because he's not a football guy and he's a baseball guy. So he may want to do the two franchise tags and be difficult about this. But, you know, if you're Russell, you have to kind of maybe think about what he's doing and saying, now, wait a second here. I want to still be able to win and get to a championship game, so I'll take 31-6. And so I just think it gets a slight tick after a little under Aaron Rodgers.
Here's the difficulty with if you took that approach with the two franchise tags like Kirk Cousins did, is that that kind of presumes that you won't win a Super Bowl in that time. Because if you do win a Super Bowl, I mean, the issue, Washington could have franchise tagged him again. It was just really, really expensive, right?
It would have been $33 million or $34 million bucks.
If Washington had won the Super Bowl last year, they would have franchise tagged him again, right?
Probably not. No, they'd have to work out some kind of a deal. It's tough. I mean, because it jumps when you have a franchise tag that's going to jump as a third one more than $10 million. I mean, it's hard to keep anything together.
I guess I should rephrase it this way: if they had won a Super Bowl with Kirk Cousins last year,
yeah,
they would not have let him leave as a free agent.
No, they'd find a way to sign him.
They would either sign him, and if they couldn't sign him and it was adamant about it. And I guess that's the thing is, I think the Kirk Cousins path will work for a guy who's kind of that, I'm not quite sure if he's a franchise quarterback. He's good, and he could get to the playoff. Like, it doesn't work with the guy where you're like, that's absolutely a franchise tag. If you're truly an elite quarterback, I don't think that path gets you out of town if you just keep signing franchise tags.
No, I agree, because it's tough on trying to sustain a team when you have that big of a cap number. And, you know, you want to try to have enough around you to be able to win. And in the case of Kirk, what happened is that, you know, I think that there was a little bit of an alienation there because it became such a distraction that some of the players weren't totally on board with that. And so they were kind of happy, some of them, when this thing ended, and now they were able to get Alex Smith and then get him to a long-term contract. I mean, really, I think it's still more on the Redskins. I mean, because it was like, come on now. I mean, Kirk did nothing wrong. I mean, he's sitting there with a franchise tag of $19.9 million, and they're offering $16. Well, gee, do you take the $16? Don't think so. Then when you go up to $23 and you know, they're offering like $20, it's like, well, why would I want to do that? And so he was able to cash in and get the $28 million and probably could have got $30 because I would imagine the Jets would have paid him $30. So it's like, you know, you got to be a good businessman, and he was a good businessman, but it did cause a strain in the locker room.
John, Jerry DePoto getting a contract extension. Do you have any idea what GMs in the MLB make?
Don't they make in the 3 to 4 range or something of that nature?
That's kind of what we were thinking.
Yeah. What are football?
How many years did he get? I know it said multi-year, but
we don't know yet.
We're not the specific.
Doesn't that seem low for a baseball general manager?
Well, I mean, what? I think some get as much as 8. Some, you know, the top ones. I mean, you know, you go to Chicago, and they may get somewhere in the 8 range, but I think for the most part, it's going to be in the 3s and the 4s.
Yeah. What did you think about the Jerry DePoto getting that? Seemed like that was inevitable, and then Scott Servais probably soon to follow, right?
Yeah, and because I know I talked about it on the show today. I mean, you know, where are they going to end up for wins? I mean, right now, you know, if they just go 500 the rest of the way, you know, they're still going to be able to be, you know, 92 to 95 wins. And it's like, what? You're not going to bring the general manager and the coach back? I mean, is this, unless the Toronto Raptors were trying to be involved in this, their ownership. You know, because, I mean, you take a coach that gets you 350-plus win seasons and you fire him after 59 wins, it's like, well, you're not going to renew the contracts of the people that got you into the 90-win category?
Yeah, well, yeah, of course they're going to bring him back. And
yeah.
So Servais, I'm sure we're going to get the news on Servais here pretty soon, too. John, I've become a fan of Marquise Goodwin of the 49ers, a wide receiver. He got a, let's see, last year he got a 3-year, $20 million contract. I'm hoping you can tell me more about him because he just bought a house for his mom and his sister who has cerebral palsy. And I love stories like this.
Yeah, that's really good. So, I mean, just kind of a good, speedy type of receiver. I don't know. I thought it kind of caught me cold that he was able to get that kind of money. You know, I think that's what you're looking at. That might be the kind of money that Tyler Lockett might be able to get that. So there might be a comparable there. But, you know, not a great receiver, but he kind of fits the scheme. I mean, he's got the quickness and all those different things. Not a great one. You know, they still eventually need to upgrade. But, you know, at least they got him locked in for at least a couple years now.
I'm curious with Tyler Lockett. I think Tyler's got a lot on the line this year because 2 years ago, I thought he was ready for a breakout as a receiver and maybe wasn't going to be as explosive as DeSean Jackson, but somebody who was going to be a big play threat in that same sort of mold. I didn't think he looked as fast last year.
Well, he was coming off a major injury and said that he was playing.
Brutal injury.
Yeah, he was playing like at 70-some percent.
Yeah,
I thought that was a low estimate. I mean, because I think he played better than that. But and you can see his returns getting better as the year went on, and you can see his routes got better as the year went on. So I think he was just coming back from a major injury, and that's why, you know, to look slow as a matter, it's like you know, sometimes you can't beat the odds and get everything going at the right time at the beginning of the season. But I think as the season went on, he got faster and better.
I totally agree, and that's why I think he's got a lot on the line this year because. If he can show and take another step forward and be as explosive or more explosive even than he was at the end of last season, then you get into the question of what he'll do. If you're Seattle, would you consider sort of making a bet? Because if you extended him right now, it would be at a significantly cheaper rate than if he had a breakout year. Or do you keep that carrot of the contract dangled out in front of him, thinking that's the idea that will get the most out of him is if he's playing for that future earnings?
No, I think because, you know, I think sometimes that gets overrated. It's like, oh, okay, so he's playing for the money. Well, you're playing for the money every year. I mean, it's like you realize if you don't have a good season, the money's going to go away because they can cut you. And so you're always playing for the money. You know, sometimes you got a little bit of extra motivation. But I think in this case, if they can get him done in that $5 to $6 million range, I think it would be wiser because, you know, what you're looking at, do you want the Paul Richardson type of experience where, okay, you know, you let him go into the last year, and understandably so, because his first, if you look at Paul Richardson, would you agree with this? His first 3 years were not as productive as Tyler Lockett. Tyler Lockett's first 3 years, I think, were more productive than Paul Richardson. And then Paul came on last year with the 40-some catches and the big plays and all that, and he got $8 million. Well, that $8 million in free agency now is probably going to be $9 million. So would you rather pay $5 or $6 now and have him locked up, or would you rather wait to pay $9 and possibly lose him?
Yeah, I think that's a good point you make, John, because I would have kind of said, well, you know, Paul Richardson, like, he got healthy, and Paul Richardson was pretty banged up his first 3 years, too. You had a couple of different injuries that he had in there, so maybe you look at that experience and say, we're better to get ahead of the curve here than wait for Tyler to have and emerge as a starting caliber wide receiver.
Well, and think about this is that, okay, so you need to start rewarding your own. I mean, that's what this team did so well with the core group, you know, taking care of them, giving them their second contracts and getting Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett their next contracts. I mean, that was huge. But, you know, you can see that one thing that you have an advantage on, it's like, okay, well, we need to see one more year. Let's say you want to see another year on Frank Clark. You want to see another year on Tyler Lockett. I don't buy that because, I mean, you know what you have in these two. They're there every day. I mean, you see them, you know them. And yet, if you go out in free agency to try to replace somebody, look at the damage you might be able to get. I mean, $8 million in Luke Jokel, and he's not in the league right now. $4.5 million for Eddie Lacy, and he's not in the league right now. And so I think, you know more about the player you have, and I think you're better served if you can get the affordable contract to get him done.
Hey, John, tell us about the Eli Manning Super Bowl helmet, and there was some fraud there. Where is that whole case?
Well, the fraud case was settled, so the couple of the equipment people involved are no longer working for the New York Giants, and so it's still kind of an ugly situation, but apparently, the helmet that he had, or is it the jersey, or I guess it's the helmet. You know, the helmet that he has from victory over the Patriots is one that's now going to go in an auction, and they think that's going to get, what, $134,000 or something like that. It's supposed to go for big dollars. And of course, because I think everybody's suspicious, is it the right helmet or not? They have provided some kind of a proof, based on pictures that this was the helmet. I mean, you can apparently see it. So that's where it goes. But the case is now closed. It's been settled, and kind of the black mark because, you know, it was not nice that, you know, people were buying things apparently and they weren't the real deal.
You know what, though? If you're a weird enough person that you want an article of clothing that another grown man has sweated on, I believe you deserve to get ripped off.
Oh, that's kind of a bold thought. I mean,
yeah, I think if you're the kind of person that's going to spend $100,000 on a game used jersey, you deserve. It is a crime to not separate a fool from his money.
But it's not like he's going to wear it. I mean, he's probably going to put it in a trophy.
It's weird. It's still weird. It's weird to pay that kind of money for something that someone else has worn.
Okay. This coming from Princess Leia. This is coming from somebody that wore a Princess Leia outfit.
Well done, John. Well done.
Boy, what, you think there's people out there that would pay for that piece of clothing?
Yeah,
this was worn by Danny O'Neill.
I think Danny could probably be able to pay somebody, you know, $10 to take it.
Yeah, that would be there. Yeah.
All right, Professor, I got one. You know, usually I want to end with a bang here, but this isn't so much of a bang. Pro Football Focus.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Danny. Pro Football Focus, they're saying the Seahawks have the 12th best roster in the league. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. Yeah, because, I mean, you look at it and they still have, I think, the equivalent of like 10, you know, 7 or 8, 10 Pro Bowl. I mean, they have enough Pro Bowl players. You know, they have enough good draft choices. I think that's pretty accurate because, you know, I was going through some of it and, you know, I tried to go into blue players and green players, you know, elite players and the next group and all that stuff. And, you know, they have him as a top five quarterback. They certainly have, you know, good grades in the 80s on Frank Clark on the Pro Football Focus. You know, they got, you know, Bobby Wagner goes through the roof as far as their ratings. I mean, he's rated as one of their best defensive players. KJ Wright has good ratings. So, no, I think that's pretty fair.
Well, John, I think that Dave and I are getting sunburned heads. Is that what you're feeling right there?
You're
shading yourself? I feel like I'm getting
heat here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you get a sweaty jersey from one of the Mariners to put on top of your head?
Yeah.
That plays Dan?
That would be funny. Yeah, pay a premium for that one. Hey, John, you know what we don't say often enough? Thank you for coming on. We really like talking to you every day.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, we appreciate it, and you have a good weekend.
Okay,
thanks, John.
If you missed any of the Cold Hard Facts brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, download the podcast at 710sports.com.
That was very thoughtful of you. Very
I just
nice,
thought
Danny.
We like talking to him each and every day. We're going to go try to find a couple of bonnets for Jim and Dave to keep them from getting sunburned scalps. We're hopefully going to be talking to the Mariners owner. We're going to see if we can get John Stanton and have Jim investigate his wallet again. That's next.
You're listening to Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. It is brought to you. It's a happy hour. It's brought to you by Heritage Distillings BSB and we've got John Stanton with us.
Damn nice to be here, gentlemen.
We appreciate having you. And congratulations. Do we congratulate you when you spend a whole lot of money to extend your general manager? Is that the right word? But this is, it's a day that's very exciting for the franchise.
I'm thrilled that Jerry's going to be with us for years to come. I'm excited about the work that he's done. And I think, you know, one of the things that's, you know, hard to fully appreciate is it's a real victory for the whole organization. You know, I spoke on behalf of ownership. Kevin spoke on behalf of management. But it's also the baseball operations folks that are, in effect, validated. Large percentage of the guys in that baseball operations department are guys that Jerry either hired or recruited or came during his tenure. And the success of the team is in part a result of their great work, as it is obviously part of the work that the guys on the field have done.
You know, I'm curious to know when you guys thought to start this ball rolling, because in spring, I mean, you didn't really know what you were going to get. The way the season has developed has been, I don't want to say surprising, but it went exactly the way Jerry wanted it to go. Did you guys have a strong feeling that before the season started that you were going to do something mid-season?
Oh, you mean with Jerry?
Yeah.
Let me answer the predicate and then try and come back to Jerry in a second. I think that all of us come into the season with great optimism. I would expect as an athlete, you know, certainly as a member of the front office, you start every season with a feeling of optimism because you see your strengths and you don't see other teams' strengths.
So I always say in 1992 when we were 2-14,
right,
for the Seahawks, I thought we were going to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's the attitude.
And I think you want your organization to be that way. They're clearly realists. They're realists in every part of the organization. Sometimes we call them cynics, but you know, that's when they're wrong. And Jim's here, for example, today.
Dave framed that question a lot nicer than I would have, because I would have just said, what took you so long to do this?
No, okay. No. So, you know, Jerry said something I thought very insightful in the press conference we did at 2 o'clock this afternoon for him. And that is that most people, you know, my dad was a Boeing engineer, right? You know, Jerry's dad worked in financial services. Kevin's dad was a fireman. They didn't grow up with the notion or go through life with the notion that they had a contract or needed to get a contract. So when we talk on the air to our fans, you know, I think it's important to acknowledge that it's pretty special that we do give both players and members of our front office, meaning the general manager, the manager, you know, contracts as a commitment to them. But we had a commitment to Jerry without that. And I think that the thing I'd like to say, you know, talk about Jerry is his intelligence and his capability. Yeah. You know, that what's happened in baseball is that and this extends well prior to my involvement, that over time, the new collective bargaining agreements have narrowed the number of competitive advantages, particularly that the big market clubs have. You know, Jim and I grew up, you know, in an era where the Yankees were dominant, right? I mean, that dynamic, you know, where, you know, they could buy a great team every year, you know, extended even, you know, the Yankees struggled in some of the 70s, but, you know, there were periods of time where if the Mariners had a good player like Tino Martinez, they'd just wait and they'd buy him, right? And now the collective bargaining agreement has narrowed the number of things that teams can do. And I think it's put a premium on being smart. I think that, you know, you look at what's happened in terms of international signing money, you look in luxury tax, you look at all of the more subtle aspects of the collective bargaining agreement, they put a premium on being smart. And I think that having the smartest general manager in baseball is a competitive advantage. And I think we've got it. I think Jerry, from the general managers I've met, and certainly I don't know them all, is the smartest I know and one of the smartest in baseball. And I think that, you know, so go back to the predicate of your question, right? I think we were all optimistic at the beginning of the season because of the clever moves. The move to bring Segura and Haniger in a year ago for you know, frankly, a pitcher and a shortstop that we didn't think necessarily fit us in the long term. Terrific players. I wish them well. But you know, the kinds of guys that we got in that deal. And you know, the deal to bring D. Gordon here, I'm not sure there are other general managers that say, I want the Gold Glove second baseman who led the National League in steals 3 of the last 4 years to play center field for their team. And, you know, no one could have foreseen the circumstances with Robbie's suspension. And, you know, it took, what, a day? You know, I was standing with Harold Reynolds. It happened to be one of those Facebook games the day Robbie got suspended. I was standing out on the field, and Harold Reynolds walks up next to me, and I'm talking to the legendary second baseman for the Mariners, watching D. Gordon take ground balls at second. I mean, there was some dynamic there. But fundamentally, you know, Jerry is willing to take chances. He's willing to make mistakes. He's willing to apply analytics, but also scouting, and do things differently and better than other general managers. And we wanted him to be a part of this organization for many years. And he told us in advance of the signing, he wanted to be a part of this. This wasn't really a negotiation. It was a commitment that he had made to us and we made to him that, in effect, was validated by the contract.
Is it pretty much a given, and was it conveyed to him by you, John, that you want to see something done next with Scott Service?
You know, it is. I wouldn't put it that way, Jim. It has to be the general manager's decision to hire the manager, right? I grew up in a corporate environment. You can't hold someone responsible for performance and make decisions for them. That said, Jerry's made it crystal clear to us. He said it in the press conference that his next thing to do is to get Scott on board. I think that I wanted And Kevin wanted this to be Jerry's day, recognizing the great things that Jerry's done. Jerry shares that credit with everyone, you know, starting with Scott. And I'm certainly hopeful we'll have a deal with Scott fairly soon.
We're talking to John Stanton here at Edgar's Cantina. It's one of our favorite places to be on Fridays for home games. It's going to be a great weekend series. It's been a great week here. The attendance, the energy, the environment that's been here. I'll ask you this, John, because then you mentioned Kevin Mather, the president, Scott Service, Jerry DePoto. There's kind of been a change at the top of the organization, including you, that over the past 3, 4, 5 years, we've seen a significant change. The culture of this team, is today's announcement with Jerry DePoto, is that a reflection of kind of the momentum you guys have built going forward?
I think of those two as two related notions, and I'd like to comment on culture first and then talk about, you know, the momentum and the generation change. You know, culture is vitally important to me. It means something slightly different in the front office. It means respecting the individual. It means a commitment to diversity and inclusion. It means everyone's ideas and thoughts are respected, you know, in a lot of ways, you know, hopefully like any business in Seattle. I think that on the field, you know, where Scott sets the tone, he has created a culture that's similar, but that there's an element of fun, there's an element of next guy up, everyone taking a turn to do a job. I think in sales, we expect everyone to do the job every day, right? That it's cool that, you know, last night D's triple, you know, and that magnificent catch of his was kind of the signature move. I mean, great to see Herman get his first home run in a Mariner uniform. I mean, different guys. And you know, some guy's going to be 0 for 3, 0 for 4, 0 for 5, you know, on that same day. You know, Gonzalez, you know, by his own admission, didn't have his best stuff at the beginning of that game. But, wow, the fifth and sixth were fun to watch. For a while, I wasn't sure he was going to make it to the fifth and sixth, but fifth and sixth were fun to watch. So I think that the notion of culture on the team is different, and Jerry bridges that gap, right? Jerry's a part of the front office. He does things as an executive, in a sense, like any business, right? And he walks through that clubhouse, and he is, you know, the guy who has, you know, Jerry loves to cook. I'm not sure I'm supposed to say that. You know, he creates a recipe of players, and he puts those ingredients together to create a very special meal, very special team on the field. And let me go back to the other part of your question. I think that there's a continuity, particularly with Kevin and I, you know, with the folks that precede us in Howard and John Ellis, with Chuck, with others that have retired from the organization. I think that those people are still fully invested in seeing the success of this team. I joked with John Ellis, who's mid-80s now, if we ever get a World Series trophy, excuse me, when we get a World Series trophy, I expect him to be standing on the podium, you know, with his hand on that trophy, because he, in fact, deserves that. And I think that with the manager and the general manager, there is a little bit of difference in the transition between Lloyd and Jack, and the transition, you know, with Chuck. You know, I look forward to the days that we've got, you know, Lou Piniella-like tenure in this organization. I think Scott, at the end of the season, may be the second or third most winning coach in the history of the Mariners. At some level, after 40 years, that's sad. Right, that Lou obviously is number one. We should have had more success. We shouldn't have waited 13 years to make the playoffs, right? But that's history, right? I mean, that's irrelevant to where we are. We can only win one game today, and we can only win one game tomorrow, and we got to keep doing that. And I think for everyone in this organization and everyone who's been in this organization, they feel invested in this team's success.
Well, I'll tell you what, you won 9 of 10. Jim doesn't have your wallet yet.
Threw it at me.
Yeah, he did, but you immediately opened it again. So you feel free. Could we twist your arm? Would you be willing to stick around for another segment with us?
Sure.
All right. John Stanton, our conversation with him continues next from the Cantina.
This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere.
Everywhere.
At 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
It is Danny, Dave, and Moore. the happy hour. Heritage Distilling, BSB, brown sugar bourbon, and we've got John Stanton with us here. Cheers to the happy hour. And we've talked about Jerry DePoto and the extension that the Mariners general manager has. We're also in the midst of what is an incredible run this season and a team that is very fun to watch play. Different stars each night. And D. Gordon's catch last night, his triple. It seems like each night you've got a different player that's stepping up. What's this like as an owner to watch your team play in this way?
You know, it's special. I've been around a lot of teams from, you know, coaching T-ball in high school, you know, being involved with the Rainiers and a couple of teams in Eastern Washington, the Sweets and the Pippins. And when a team ignites, when the kids, the players, these are men, obviously, you know, get together emotionally, and it is special. It makes me a little crazy to read articles that say we've been lucky. There was a good article this week on FanGraphs that talked about us being clutch. This team, in high leverage situations where the game is on the line, we are the winningest team in baseball. We aren't that when we're either up five or down five. I worry more about, you know, Eddie Diaz coming in a game where we're up by more than the number four or more, so that it's not a save on the line. You know, it almost seems like we aren't as intense. No criticism implied, but you know, in a stressful game, these guys bring it, and they bring it every night, and it's exciting. And the one of the joys that I've had has been to get to know a few of those guys personally, and gosh, they care about each other. I mean, they pick each other up. They do the things that great teams do. And, you know, from what I can tell, and I've asked the question, there are no negative voices in that clubhouse. There are no people who are bringing the other guys down. And, you know, without naming names, there were some last year. And I don't think it, I think that the guys affected the winning. The winning didn't affect the guys. So.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that. I was just going to ask you what your interaction is like with the players, because I've been around three different owners. One was Ken Behring, Pat Bowlen in Denver. I would think you're most like John Nordstrom, because that was the guy that I still love him. And I just remember being on the field and saying, hey, nice suits, where'd you guys get those? And those kind of, and he was always, but you know, you're the owner of the team. So what's your interaction with the players like?
Well, first of all, that's an incredibly flattering comparison, because you know, when I've gone to Seahawk training camp, even this year, I mean, John is often there, and he's just an icon in this community. And I could never hope to even approach him.
Now, every time he's there, I go over and I try to get around
him.
You
learn something from him.
Yeah,
you absolutely
exactly.
Learn something from him. And to be clear, I'm the chairman, I'm the managing partner, but I'm one of a number of owners. And, right. You know, a lot of our owners make a difference, I think, in terms of the contributions they make. You know, I know I'm somewhere between the age of the fathers and the grandfathers of most of our players, right? I mean, I am not expecting to go out for a beer with these guys, and, you know, not because, you know, I'm, you know, I shouldn't, but just simply because I don't think they'd have very much fun. But the dynamic from my point of view is I'd like to understand what makes them tick. And if I have one thing I think that I can be helpful on, it's leadership. And I've spent some time talking to some of the guys, frankly, if you will, the ones closer to my age, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Nelson, you know, I've spent a lot of time with Robbie in the last 2 months. And, you know, I've been to DR last 2 years as well. You know, I've spent quite a bit of time with Ichiro. And I think those guys have the ability to impart wisdom as both veterans and as leaders, and the two are different. You know that there are veterans who aren't leaders, there are leaders who aren't veterans, but when you get guys, and I think those guys are that, and I think that D is that. I don't feel like I know him as well. It's obviously his first year here, and there are younger guys. I think Zanino's a leader. I think that it's a little bit harder because the pitchers, obviously, the starters, you know, don't play every day. I play every fifth day. You know, that it's in some respects two groups, and you need leaders in each group. And I think that if I can be helpful to them in talking about that, you know, I had a funny conversation with Robbie today about you know, just let's say, you know, some of the wealthier folks in town. And, you know, I mean, that just a curiosity, you know, that, that guys, players who are viewed iconically, interestingly view some of the business icons here, you know, as these, you know, mythical, tremendous people, and which they are. But all of us have in common that we, you know, put our, if you will, we put our pants on one leg at a time. And and they're all people, and at their core, they, you know, care about many of the same things. I'm not sure I'm answering your question very well, but, you know, I try and, you know, help them. And if I see something, and I did a couple of times last year, I'll say something to Jerry, and Jerry will say something to Scott. You know, that, that I don't pretend to have, you know, the best perception in terms of what's going on with those guys. But if something doesn't seem right, you know, if you're in the grocery store, you know, or if it doesn't seem right in your office, or it doesn't seem right on the field, it's kind of the same thing. It, your nose is probably right.
Now, you said you've been spending time with Robinson Cano. How's he holding up?
I think he's doing great. Robbie has, first of all, he had to get healthy. And he did that. He worked his butt off in the clubhouse doing that. He worked with the training staff. He worked with outside trainers that he paid for himself, you know, to get healthy. He's been out throwing and hitting every day. You know, I think he's hoping to come back as healthy as he's ever been. I mean, you know, when you're a player for as long as Robbie is, you don't get July off. You don't get June off. He's had the opportunity to work and condition. He's also quietly, without trying to take any credit for it, he's done things in this community. I mean, he's, you know, done things that you know, because he has been a player for, I guess it's what, a dozen years, you don't get that chance during the season. When everybody's wearing Mariner jerseys at a children's hospital, for example, you know, generally the players, you know, kind of unlike football, they don't have a day off to go do that. Some of them take the extra time to do it, but it's hard because they're expected to do stuff. And you know, I think Robbie's had a lot of interaction with the players, and I think that as we approach August 14th, which is hopefully the day he's back, I think that you're going to hear more from Robbie about how he hopes to positively impact the team in the last 40 games of the season.
We got John Stanton with us here, and wrapping up our conversation. And you've been very gracious to spend this amount of time with us to talk about it. It's been a blast to watch this team this season, and to see the energy kind of coming back into the park. I know I saw you at the game on July 4th.
Yeah.
And
does everyone know what kind of fan you are, Danny?
I think everybody's fairly
an obnoxious
clear.
One.
No. Yeah. The word I'd use is enthusiastic.
Okay.
Right. That you know, I have never seen someone single-handedly stop the wave.
Well,
you know, I was sitting two rows in front of him, you know, on what was it, Tuesday, and he was there with his lovely wife and his in-laws. I would have been embarrassed if I were them, but they weren't. And, you know, the wave is going around. It goes around a couple of times, and I'm watching the play on the field. I hear in a screeching voice the word, "Stop!" And I turn around, and there's Danny standing with both arms up trying to stop the wave. Didn't appear to work. But he tried.
I did try.
Well, even Robinson Cano recognized Danny because he went to Boston and was, you were just talking about Robbie, he was out there heckling somebody. Who are you?
Hembry. Hembry, yeah. The big reliever who came in with braids in his hair.
Yeah, and so
I encouraged him to use soap next time.
Oh, jeez. He saw Danny. See, he's mean, too. Yeah, I don't want to tell you about the Evan Longoria one. That was ridiculous. He simulated a machine gun up in the stands.
He had an AK-47 that was stolen from
All
him
right.
at one point.
So anyway, yeah, Robinson was like, "Yeah, Danny, you're Danny. I remember you."
Yeah. I don't know how he remembered me, Dave.
Yeah, I know.
John,
so quiet.
Seriously, though, congratulations. And this is a really great season. It's going to be a great series here this weekend against Colorado. And everybody, I know that the energy that's come into this park in the last couple months and the energy this team has. Thanks so much for having us down here.
Can I say one final thing? And that is, I'd just like to thank the fans. I mean, that we have had 7,000 to 8,000 people walk up this week. I mean, it's been fun. It's been electric. And those guys on the field feel it. And they can feel when there are more fans in the stands. I don't know if they really play better, but they feel like they play better. And the enthusiasm that these fans have brought makes a difference in the performance of this team, and I want them to know I deeply appreciate that.
Well, it is. It's been a fun ride, and it's not going to end anytime soon. We're looking forward to it tonight. Thanks so much, John.
Thank you.
It is Danny David Moore. We'll continue next from the Cantina.